Hi, I'm Susie Larson. Thanks so much for listening to this podcast from Live the Promise. There are many more podcasts available up on the website at myfaithradio.com, and your support makes this possible. Thank you.
Welcome to Live the Promise. So glad you're listening today. I'm Bill Arnold, your above average interesting host, in for Susie Larson. I'm glad and excited to have you joining me today for Live the Promise. My guest today is Focus on the Family's Dr. Greg Smalley, and you know how Susie and Greg click, so it's going to be Greg and me today. It's going to be interesting. We're going to talk about the importance of building a solid first year of marriage. You know, June is wedding month. I think there's 8.2 million weddings in June. And everyone's getting excited about their big day, but what they're really facing is that first big year of marriage. And how do you do it, and how do you prepare for it, and what are you going to be looking at? So we're going to talk to Greg about that. He is a guest that needs no introduction, but before I bring him on, I just wanted to give you a little quick update. If you just tuned into the program, I'm in for Susie because I know you've heard her share over the past few months the cancer diagnosis of her brother-in-law, and he's not doing well today. Susie and her family are all together, and she's asked me to share this with you and ask for your prayer for them as a family. And I know she appreciates your support and your prayers during this time. And we support her, and we love her, and we care about her, and I know our guest does as well. Dr. Greg Smalley serves as Vice President of Marriage for Focus on the Family. His books include The DNA of Relationships and The Wholehearted Marriage. Greg and his wife, Erin, have three daughters, Taylor, Maddie, and Murphy. Is Murphy the husband of Maddie?
Well, if that's true, then someone needs to explain something to me.
Okay.
So it actually, Maddie changed her name to Murphy.
Okay,
so
gotcha.
That's what gets all my stuff.
Yeah, I'm very confused all of a sudden.
I am too, and but my children.
I love the way you chimed in. This is great. and he's got a son, Garrison, too. And you can find his influencer page at myfaithradio.com. Greg, I know you're a regular. Welcome back to the show. Thanks for joining us today.
Hey, Bill, so grateful to be with you, and my thoughts and prayers are with Susie and her family.
Yeah, no kidding. Well, you know, Susie, you know the ropes here, so let's get started. You can fill in the blanks. You got to start out with discussing a passage of Scripture. Have at it.
Which I love. You know, Hebrews 13:4 says that marriage should be honored by all. And I love that verse as far as just giving me a real concrete target. As far as, you know, one of the things that I want to do within my marriage is learn how to honor it. What does that look like? You know, it's easy for me to think about my wife, Erin. We just celebrated 24 years of marriage, and you know, I love looking for ways to honor her. But, man, we also have this marriage relationship, and it's an entity in and of itself that needs to be nurtured and cared for. And I think as we learn how to do that, that's a part of what it means to honor our marriage, and that's so critical for that engaged couple. As you said, we're at wedding seasons.
Mm-hmm.
I only know that because of Hallmark channel.
Right, right.
Tells me it's, you know, wedding season. Mm-hmm. But here we are. And so how do we, you know, get married preparing not just for the day but for a lifetime? Thus, how do we have that great first year? And I think all that is a part of honoring our marriage.
Yeah, so as couples are all excited about their big day, what they have to really prepare for is that first big year, right?
It really is, because that can, for many couples, really set a tone, either positive or negative. And I'll honestly, Bill, for my wife Erin and I, I was probably overly confident walking into my marriage. Mm-hmm. I was getting my doctorate in marriage and family. I was the son of, you know, Gary Smalley. I was just thinking, man, we should know this. We're going to have a great, easy, simple first year.
Mm-hmm.
And I was way, way off. And we really, really struggled, uh-huh. Aaron and I did. And probably to the point that 2-3 years then into our marriage, I really thought that we were kind of one more big argument away from Aaron leaving.
Wow.
And there were some things that we didn't do during that first year, and then there are some things that we shouldn't have done mm-hmm. during that first year that would have made such a big difference. And again, we were in trouble, and that's why I love helping couples kind of think through, yeah, how do we walk into marriage well-prepared and set us up for a great first few years of marriage?
Mm-hmm. I did an event with Dr. Larry Crabb years ago, and I remember him saying that he was laying in bed one night with his wife. He said, 5 inches apart physically and 5 miles apart emotionally. Ooh. And his wife said, do you think we're going to make it? And he said, I don't know. And he said, I had just finished writing a book called How to Have a Good Marriage. He said, do you ever feel like a hypocrite?
That is, I cannot tell you how true that feels in my
yeah.
own life.
So,
I was teaching marriage seminars with
yeah.
my father, and my wife barely will speak to me.
That's the vulnerability is just spectacular that you would say this and admit to it, because everyone can sigh a little bit of relief going, oh, it's them too.
But we're not on live yet, right?
No. This is we're not on the air yet. Don't worry about that.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. So
good.
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah. Don't worry.
That.
Yeah. You're cool. So let's talk about some of the points that we want to discuss today. One being when you get married, you're part of a community, and your marriage is going to be under attack because, let's face it, the enemy is going to work to destroy things.
You know, one of my favorite concepts to talk about in terms of marriage is that, you know, when God created this thing called marriage, his idea, he created it, but he, as he talks about in Genesis 2, that the man shall leave his father and mother, and shall cleave to his wife, and the two shall become one. And, you know, the more and more I've studied and experienced this idea of oneness, I'm really convinced that is the superpower of marriage. So if marriage had the ability to fly or to run really fast, I mean, this oneness is our superpower. When,
mm-hmm.
when God brings us together and joins us, man, what Aaron and I can do together is so far greater than what we can do on our own. There's this true power there. And therefore, we need to protect it and realize that since God created marriage, created oneness, we've got an enemy who also then wants to attack the very thing that makes us strong. He wants to go after the oneness. He wants us disconnected,
mm.
you know, in disharmony and disunity. And that's why for a lot of couples, they, like Aaron and I did, it's easy to slip into some really bad habits of conflict or poorly managing conflict. And that's why I always want to say to couples, first and foremost, man, you've been given an amazing gift, a very powerful gift. Protect that oneness, which to me, a part of protecting our oneness is going, we're not going to do marriage alone. I think the worst thing that a couple can do is get married and isolate and kind of hole up, and we're just going to worry about us. I love the idea, you know, Hillary Clinton said, you know, it takes a village to raise a child. Well, I would say that it takes a village to raise a marriage, and we need to be connected to a greater community.
Mm-hmm. I love the bumper sticker that says, hate is not a family value. I'm thinking when there was only one family on the earth, in that family there was a murder.
Yeah.
So
yeah, true.
Yeah, so go ahead.
We can't isolate, and we need others to be helping keep our marriage strong.
Yeah.
And, you know, like in Deuteronomy 24:5, where it talks about, you know, when a couple gets married, that the man is not supposed to go off to war, but for a year he's supposed to stay home and bring happiness to his wife.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's the part of the balance is to go, there are definitely some relationships that I need to alter and to change and to pull back, maybe with my guy friends, my relationship with my parents need to look different. I mean, I need to kind of take that leave of absence from the closeness, but we can't abandon the importance of going to church and being part of a small group and having an older mentor couple, you know, having a peer couple who can just help us during this first year. I mean, we need those relationships, but it has to be in balance, because
mm-hmm.
I know a lot of couples who, you know, just keep, you know, it's like they get married and just still act as if they're single and keep hanging out with their buddies and keep spending a lot of time with mom and dad. And that's not what I'm talking about when I say community.
Mm-hmm. So if you're going to have a first year, a solid first year of marriage, another thing you have to do is be committed to being a healthy individual.
Yeah.
Ooh, that's a big one.
Yeah. I wish someone would have really helped me to understand that.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, all of us have baggage. All of us have issues. We've got stuff going on in our own life that we really do need to be committed to continuing to work on that stuff. Because I look back, I was 23 when I got married, and I was a punk. I was full of myself. I was so selfish.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't get some of the of my own issues that really began to create some problems within my marriage. And I love that analogy. You know, if you've ever seen a monkey trap, it's a coconut that's been hollowed out.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of has a chain that's tethered to the ground or to a tree. And what's unique about a monkey trap is that inside this little coconut, they'll put like a piece of fruit or something that would attract a monkey. Well, the monkey reaches his hand into the coconut, grabs hold of what's ever in there. So his hand is small and flexible enough to go into the coconut. But once he has that fruit, he can't pull his hand out of that hole. And what's interesting about monkeys is that once they grab hold of something that they want, they will not let go.
Really?
Even as a predator approaches or as a, you know, hunter approaches. And I think that we all in our life have that something that we just are unwilling to let go of. And that was so true for me when we got married.
Mm-hmm.
Is that there were issues in my life.
Mm-hmm.
I did some things secretively around money.
Mm-hmm.
Like I felt controlled that Aaron wanted to talk about every little way that we'd spend our money, and it felt controlling to me. And so part of my monkey trap was that I just kind of would hide some money,
mm-hmm.
$20 bill here, there,
yeah.
just so that I felt like I had some freedom.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, that was a huge issue that I wasn't willing to let go of. It just wreaked havoc, as you could imagine. Within my marriage, matter of fact, my wife still teases me to this day. The way she found out that I was kind of holding back some money here
mm-hmm.
and there was that I would take a $20 bill, a $10 bill, a $5, whatever, and put it into a tennis can that was down in the basement of our little apartment condo
mm-hmm.
thing we rented. And one time our neighbor said, "Hey, we're going to play tennis, but we don't have any tennis balls. Do you guys have any tennis balls?" And Aaron's like, "I don't know. Greg has a bunch of sports stuff." And so she walks down in the basement, sees a tennis can, grabs it, hands it to him. Well, they come back in like 20 minutes going, "There are no balls in here, but it's full of money."
Oh, boy.
And so
busted.
Busted. And you haven't met my wife, but she's got this amazing, like, killer sense of humor.
Mm-hmm.
And so she gets dressed up in this little white tennis outfit with her racket holding in one hand, sitting on the couch. And I walk in and she goes, "Hey, I thought we'd do something different tonight and go play tennis." And she's holding the can and the racket.
Ooh.
And she goes, "Or," and kind of shaking the can,
mm-hmm.
"we can talk about something else."
Oh.
And I just went, "Okay, I need to talk to you about something." Yeah.
You're
kind of hiding money. So, you know, I got into counseling because of that very reason. And the point being is that all of us have issues. All of us have something that we're not going to let go of. And like that monkey trap, boy, it can keep us really, really stuck.
Yeah.
And we've got to be willing to keep growing as an individual as we walk into our marriage.
I agree. All right, you're listening to Live the Promise. Bill Arnold in today for Susie Larson. We're talking to Greg Smalley. We'll be back in just a minute. Welcome back to Live the Promise. Talking to Greg Smalley today. Greg has got lots of information on how to have a successful, solid first year of marriage. We're talking about all the weddings in June and how we equip ourselves to have that solid first year of marriage. And one of the points, Greg, is you have to know how to deal with crisis because there's going to be plenty of them.
Always. You know, in I think it's 1 Corinthians 7, interesting little statement that Paul makes, and he basically says, and for those of you who get married, that you will have times of trouble. And so just the idea that, you know, crises are normal, natural part. We're going to experience troubles within our marriage. And I always look at it this way. There are going to be internal problems, and I would say those are more conflict. That's between Aaron and I. Something has happened, hurt each other, whatever. But then there's external problems that are going to hit. And we need to know how will we walk through those? How will we, you know, use that hard time? Maybe it's a loss of a job. Maybe we're moving somewhere. Maybe it's the death of a loved one. My oldest daughter, Taylor, is not officially, but about to officially be engaged. And one of the things that I love about her relationship with Caleb is that they've already faced some really, really difficult, challenging times. And they've had to learn how to kind of walk through those in a way that works for both people. Back in March the 6th, my father passed away and went to be with the Lord. And I'll never forget that Caleb brought my daughter down. They're in Arkansas. She's a nurse in Arkansas, but brought her down to Houston where my dad was at the time. And but for those two to have to walk through the death of Taylor's grandfather, and what was so interesting is that actually we were all surrounding my dad when he went to be with the Lord, and so right at that last moment, I mean, he's taking his last breaths, I felt this hand on my back and just kind of rubbing my back very tenderly, and my daughter was standing next to me, and so I just assumed it was her arm. Her hand rubbing my back. So I just kind of reached up, or I just looked up and winked at her and said thanks. And then I noticed both of her hands. And I thought, okay, who's touching me? And I looked back, and it was actually her boyfriend, Caleb. And it was the most tender, kind, loving, wasn't saying a word, just was trying to kind of stay out of the way, but just provide some comfort. And I just remembered thinking, and he hadn't talked to me up to this point about marrying my daughter. They're dating, but I just remember thinking, all right, that's who I want for my son-in-law. He was my dad, but I've often thought that, what would that have been like to be in the room when Gary Smalley is going to be with the Lord, kind of in your, just dating his granddaughter.
Yeah.
And yet the kid so handled that perfectly, but that, you know, so within any relationship, you're going to face these external problems. The economy goes south, natural disaster, and we have to really know then how to not just survive that stuff, but how do we thrive? And I tell couples, you know, think about that first year of marriage, sort of like moving to a foreign country. In, you know, the times that I've been to China, let's say, you know, I remember the first time I ever went to China. We have our youngest daughter is adopted from China. So I remember the first time we went there, everything was different. You know, the food was different. The smells were different. The people were different. The money, the language. I mean, just everything was different. Not bad.
Mm-hmm.
It's just different. And I think that's the right expectation. We're walking into this new marriage. And things are just going to all be different. I mean, you think about the volumes and volumes of changes that are occurring. You know, which side of the bed are you going to sleep on? In closet, how are we dividing out that space? And who's cooking? Who's cleaning? Who's doing the bill? Just all of that. It's so easy for couples in the presence, in the face of that kind of change, or a crisis, that it's so, conflict is such an easy thing then to break out.
Thank you for sharing that about your dad. That's a very tender moment.
Yeah, that's literally one of my very favorite moments of walking him into the arms of God. How cool that was that my future son-in-law was able to be there and walk through that with Taylor.
Yeah,
they've had to figure out how do we go through those hard times and yet still be strong as a couple.
Yeah, defining moment for sure. So you kind of led me into the next question I have, which is, this first year, if it's going to be solid, you better figure out a way to divvy up the responsibilities in a way that works for both people. And I suppose if we look at the way certain tribes do certain things, you know, in our house, you know, my dad never did this, so I'm not doing it now.
Right.
And the woman might say, well, in our family, my dad did this all the time. I expect you to do this. So there's going to be some clashing right away.
There really is. And this was a huge adjustment for Aaron and I, because to your point, I mean, just, you know, her parents didn't do it this way or mine didn't do it this way.
Yeah.
How do we figure that out? And, for me, I think one of the key things that I've learned is just to remember that, you know what, Aaron and I are on the same team now. We're on the Smalley team. We're husband and wife. And therefore, we either will win together or we're going to lose together. There's no such thing in a marriage as a win-loss.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, Aaron can't feel like chores have been divided up in a way that doesn't feel good for her or feels like a loss to her,
mm-hmm.
and yet somehow I win in that.
Yeah.
We will either win together or we're both going to lose. And it's been really good for us just to remind each other that, hey, you know what? Hey, we're on the same team. And in order for us to win, Aaron, it's got to be something that feels good to both of us. I love I think it's Philippians 2:4, that says, don't just look to your own interests, but also look to the interests of others.
Mm-hmm.
And that's that idea that man, Aaron needs to matter in our marriage. I need to matter. There has to be room for both of us. And first and foremost, we approach making decisions or divvying up chores as teammates. And I think if we start there, now then we can begin to talk about, okay, so it's got to feel good to both of us. So how do we begin to divide things up in a way that feels equitable, you know, that feels fair to both people?
Yeah. We just have a quick minute before we go to break. But what happens when the dating, courting process, he's doing maybe nice things for her, and then they get married, and now she kind of expects that to be done, and she doesn't show the appreciation she once showed, and he's starting to feel like, ooh, boy.
Yeah, well, I mean, certainly that if we're not expressing or showing that appreciation to someone, I might lose motivation, or I might get discouraged, and more than likely might quit doing some of the things that really made Aaron feel loved or feel cared for.
Yeah.
And so, although that's my responsibility, I mean, I need to do those things anyway.
Yep. All right,
that validation is important.
We got to go to break, Greg. We'll be back in just a minute with Live the Promise, Bill Arnold in for Susie Larson. Thanks for being with us today. Be back in a minute. Welcome back to Live the Promise. Thanks for joining us today. Bill Arnold in for Susie Larson. And I'm getting a nice opportunity to talk to her good friend, Greg Smalley. And he needs no introduction, so I'm not going to give him any. There you go, Greg. Pull up a chair.
That was actually true.
I know. So let's get back to our discussion, which I know for me is interesting.
Yeah, I always feel convicted when we start to talk about marriage.
Yeah. So you need to have a plan to proactively invest in your marriage. Obviously, love is not self-sustaining. I have no idea what that means, so you go ahead.
You know, I think what I've noticed, and even what I experienced in my own marriage, is that sometimes it's easy to get so busy, to get, you know, doing life together, managing a household, working, dealing with kids, that it's easy to sort of put our marriage, our relationship on the back burner. It's almost like the attitude is that we'll just put it on autopilot and just send it down the road. And it's a horrible way to do marriage. Because love is not self-sustaining. It's just not going to stay healthy. We have to nurture it. We have to build into it. And some of the things that Aaron and I have learned to do over the years, we try. Our goal is every day to have a little 10-minute pause. And so it's a kind of a daily 10-minute pause. And the rule is this, that when we're going to talk for 10 minutes, but it can't be about administrating our marriage. So we can't talk about schedules. We can't talk about to-do lists, who's picking up who tomorrow. We can't talk about our relationship as far as, hey, you hurt me, last night when you said this. What the goal is we want to stay current and updated. And as we do life together, and every day is different as far as, man, I might be going through a really tough day. Something might have changed. I might have discovered something new about myself. My goal needs to be that I want to stay current on what's going on in my wife's life. How is she feeling? What's going on? What do I need to learn today? Because, again, I don't want to wait, until 5 years down the road to really do this. I only have today to really be a great husband. So what's going on in her life? And the way that Aaron and I do this, and we do this in a real fun way, is we just simply ask each other, what was the high of your day and what was the low of your day? And it's just a real easy, simple way to go, hey, today I had a really hard thing come up at work and it just frustrated me or discouraged me. Or, hey, the best part was, man, I love that you woke up and worked out with me this morning. Mm-hmm. It's just a way just to stay current, to stay updated on what's going on. And so we have to invest in our marriage. So one way that we do that, 10-minute kind of pause, and every couple is going to be different. For some, they love to wake up early and they'll do coffee together. Aaron and I like to do this at the very end of the day. We just have climbed into bed. And we put the cell phones down.
Mm-hmm.
Don't do this every night. I mean, I would be lying to you if I said we do this every night.
Mm-hmm.
But we really prioritize just going, hey, take quick, tell me, high and low. And it's been great in that way.
Mm-hmm. So,
and, there's other ways to invest. Like we love the whole idea of a date night.
Mm-hmm.
And we encourage couples, man, ideally we'd all do this once a week.
Because
I think it's good to be able to get out of your house once a week, away from your children.
Mm-hmm.
And when couples get married, that during that first year, it's so easy to have to jump into certain jobs and careers that require a ton of time, and it's easy for them to kind of drift apart because they're not, having that date night that they did while they were, before they were even engaged.
Mm-hmm. So, Greg, when we talk about conflict, the absence of conflict is not necessarily a sign that things are going well. I mean, when you say, well, we never argue, ooh, that could be a red flag that there's big trouble.
And I say so.
People would show up to the table saying, I don't even know if I know how to handle conflict. I don't do confrontation well. This whole thing is intimidating. I just as soon withdraw, kind of go quiet, go frozen. And that way I can't be engaged. And that's wrong too, isn't it?
It is, in the sense that we can't see conflict as a negative thing. We have to look at combat as a negative thing. In other words, the fact that Aaron and I disagree, the fact that we see things differently based on our, personality and gender, that's a great thing for our marriage. We're two very different people, and two very different people are going to bump into each other. We're going to disagree. That's a good thing. Combat are things where we handle those disagreements in a real unhealthy way. Maybe we're yelling, giving the silent treatment, being really critical, debating, arguing. That's more combat. So that's why, first and foremost, with new couples, we want to try to get them to don't see conflict as a bad thing. See it as an opportunity. I love in James 1:2, it says, when trouble comes your way, consider that an opportunity. So when you disagree and you've been hurt by your spouse, consider that an opportunity, which means that it gives you an opportunity to deal with that, to work through that issue, because I guarantee you're going to learn something new about your spouse, about your marriage, about you,
mm-hmm.
and that's a good thing. I just, you know, Aaron and I, we've written extensively on conflict and something that we talk about a lot. And what I love about our marriage is, man, every once in a while still, you know, we get into conflict. Mm-hmm. Just the other night, literally within the last couple of days, we cooked a great dinner. Our son was about to go off for a week of summer camp. And so Aaron said, hey, I got to take him to finish up, get him some final supplies. And she said, would you just finish cleaning up? And I was like, oh, absolutely. In our house, you know, the cook never cleans. And so I took my youngest daughter, Annie, who's 8, downstairs, and we were just going to watch, you know, a quick little movie or something. And in my mind, I'm like, I'll get to the kitchen before I go to bed.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the part that I didn't hear, my wife swears that mm-hmm. she said it, I just didn't hear it, is, hey, don't forget to put away the raw chicken meat. Because we have a cat.
Oh, yeah.
And so I didn't hear that part, and I didn't realize it was sitting on the counter. And so my wife comes home an hour and a half later or whatever, and we're down in the basement. She walks in, and I just hear this, oh, man, no. So I run up thinking, oh, she's falling or something's mm-hmm. happened, a bug, whatever. And she is watching our cat has consumed half of this bag of raw chicken.
Mm.
And of course she's just frustrated. I told you to put that away, and she just kind of just went off. Well, that, you know, felt disrespectful to me, and so I'm arguing, saying, "Hey, you could have put that away. I didn't see it. You could have put it away. You have two hands," which didn't go over,
ooh,
by the way, well at all.
Yeah.
And so she's like, "And the cat's gonna be sick now." I'm like, "Honey, cat's not gonna get sick from eating raw chicken." Yes, it will. I'm like, "It kills mice. Do you think it cooks the mouse before it eats it?" Which is so stupid because, right, the logic never works in this situation.
Yeah.
So there we were. She was frustrated with me. You know, I'm frustrated with her going, why are you making such a big deal about this? I didn't know. I didn't hear you. I've done so many good things throughout the day. Why don't you talk about those?
Yeah.
And I tell you, Bill, for me, the best thing that I've learned as of late about conflict is that in Proverbs 13:10, I believe, it says that pride causes conflict. And the more and more I am understanding, seeing my own conflict, I really see how much pride plays into the arguments, because it says in the Bible that God opposes the proud. And I tell you what, so will your spouse.
Mm.
The moment we get into these disagreements, the moments we get into these arguments or conflict, man, pride starts to bubble up inside of me. And the pride that night for me was thinking, huh, look at all the wonderful things I've done for you today. You know, I brought you coffee this morning. I made the bed. I did the dish. I mean, you know, just the whole list was in my mind. So the pride was, you know, how dare you not notice the 15 things I've done right, and I can't believe that you would focus on the one stupid thing that I did wrong. And that was, for me, that was how my pride was manufacturing. Philippians 2:3 says, do nothing out of selfish ambition or vain conceit. And selfish ambition means when my own desires are far more important than my wife, to the extent that I'm willing to pursue my interests no matter how much strife it might create. And the vain conceit is basically that I'm really impressed with how right I am.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm thinking, I am so right. I have done all these wonderful things, and she is so wrong because she cares more about the one thing, you know?
Sure.
And that's what I'm learning more and more, is it says that God gives his grace to the humble. And what I'm realizing is that Aaron is going to always oppose the moments that I slip into that pride,
mm-hmm.
but she will give grace when I am humbled.
Yeah.
And so, although we went to bed connected and frustrated with each other, that next morning when we were just talking as we're getting ready, And I was still bent, man. I was still prideful going. And I said to her, I can't believe you didn't thank me for all 15 things and instead argued about the one thing. And all of a sudden I just went, oh, that I am being so prideful right now. And I asked her, I said, are you experiencing me as prideful? She's like, massively. And so again, and it's easy for someone to say, well, yeah, she should have thanked you. She should have, blah, blah. I'm not talking about her. I'm saying for me, I was totally being prideful and being arrogant in my opinion and my rightness. And in the moment that I said, you know what, Aaron, help me to better understand, how did that feel for you last night? And it was great to hear her just say, you know what, it felt like you totally ignored me. I felt taken advantage of. I felt unimportant to you. And just humility is when we seek to understand before being understood. And so that's what, you know, for me, that's what I've really been working on, is in those moments that we're in an argument, what would humility look like? Because I'm telling you, your spouse will give you grace when you become humble.
Mm-hmm. The way I see the score is Aaron 1, Greg's Professor Einstein logic 0.
Exactly. Although I still say the cat does not cook its meat.
Of course, I'm with you on that. The cat was having one happy day.
It was a grand buffet.
You've never seen the cat happier.
Fiona.
Yeah. So I read a John Gottman book, and he said it's not conflict that's going to cause trouble. It's the way in which it's brought up. And it sounds like people's triggers get set off pretty fast. Blood pressure goes up. Pulse is elevated. And then you're at a point where nothing constructive is going to happen. So how do we make the arena safe to have conflict when we're flooded?
Yeah.
Because I'm thinking Aaron came home a little flooded. Cat's eating the chicken. You're watching a movie.
Sure.
She's flooded. How can she make the arena safe?
You know, I think, one, it's hard. It's when we get our buttons pushed. I mean, it's hard to get out of our own way. It's hard to then respond in a great way. It's difficult to bring up an issue, you know, in the right way that's not going to create more conflict, more strife. You know, I think for me, what I've learned to do a little bit better is that when I get upset, when I get hurt, when I get frustrated with Aaron, I think the worst thing that we can do is immediately try to address it. When I feel my heart rate up, like you were saying, when I'm on the war path, when I want so desperately for her to hear me and understand my perspective, I think the greatest thing that we can learn to do, and I wish someone had taught me this, is to take about a 20-minute break.
Yeah.
Call a timeout.
Yeah.
Walk away. It's, you know, I think the verse that I so massively misunderstood early in our marriage was the one that says, don't let the sun go down in your anger.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought what that meant was that, well, Aaron and I can't go to bed until we've resolved our issues.
Yeah.
And so we would, I'd give her like a 5-hour energy drink, a cup of coffee to keep her awake so we could argue this thing through.
Mm-hmm.
And I just think, first of all, that verse is not on any level saying that.
Mm-hmm.
It's not saying that you need to resolve your issues before you go to bed. It's saying don't let the sun go down on your anger.
Mm.
Because when your heart is closed, you're angry. Anger is a sign that your heart is closed. And God's saying that's not a good spot for you. You're vulnerable to attack. When your heart is shut down, you need to do something about your heart. But that's between me and the Lord.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's why, for me, instead of powering through and trying somehow to talk through when we're both in a bad spot and shut down and hearts are closed, I just think it's such a healthy thing to say, you know what? I love you. I can't hear you right now. I am so mad that I just need a break. But we will talk about this tomorrow.
Yeah.
We will talk about this later on.
Yeah. All right, we're going to take a little break. When we come back, we have one more segment with Greg Smalley. Thanks for listening to Live the Promise. Bill Arnold in today for Susie. We'll be back in a minute.
It ain't over yet, so move, keep walking, soldier, keep moving on, move, keep walking.
Welcome back to Live the Promise. Thanks for being with us today. We're talking to Greg Smalley. He's a regular guest on Susie Larson's show, and Susie's not here today, but I'm filling in. And I've invited Greg to pull up a chair and make himself uncomfortable because we're talking about that first year of marriage, which has got to be solid. It's just not the excitement of the marriage or the wedding. It's the whole first year, and what do we have to do to make sure we're going to make this thing the best it can be? One of the things you suggest is make sure you're committed to a lifelong marriage, emphasis on lifelong.
We, Aaron and I, as I shared, you know, the first couple of years, about 3 years into our marriage, we were in a really, really difficult place. I honestly didn't think we were going to make it. And one of the sad things, looking back on that season, that we allowed just our hardened hearts to come out through some sarcasm, through teasing about divorce. I mean, I remember there were times where we'd get into arguments and I would, you know, say to her, you know, well, it sounds like you just don't want to be married to me anymore. That you should just leave me. I mean, there were ways, sadly, that we began to joke kind of tongue in cheek with some little bit of probably hint of truth about divorce. And that is such an awful thing to do. And I encourage couples, you know, take that word divorce out of your vocabulary. Don't ever joke about it. Just the other day, my 8-year-old daughter, maybe it was even yesterday, we were in the kitchen and she said something like, will you ever divorce mommy or something? I mean, she just like randomly asked me this. And I looked at her and I said, honey, I said, honestly, mom and dad never use that word. And I know you didn't mean it this way, but I want to ask you to never, ever use that word in regards to our marriage. I said, mom and I are going to do everything we can to keep working, to have a great marriage, but we're not going to get divorced. And I've had some of my other children kind of tease about it. Like, you know, they're listening to us argue or something and, you know, hey, your mom's going to leave you. And I'll get firm with them and say, don't speak that into my marriage. Don't ever. And Aaron, there came a point in time to where Aaron and I said, you know what? We are going to make it. I'm not sure how, but we are going to make it. And divorce is not an option. And we literally took that word out. I love the old Spanish explorer Cortez, when he landed with his men in these ships, you know, out for the Aztec gold. Everybody wanted to return to Spain. They long voyage. They were ready to give up, and he kind of used the phrase, you know, we're going to burn the ships. And so he had some torches and set all their ships on fire. In other words, his message to his men was, we're not going home, and we're going forward. As a matter of fact, the only way we're ever going to get home is we're going to have to build new ships or to take their ships. And I actually love that as a concept for a marriage. And what that needs to be our attitude. We've burned the ships. Whatever ship that Aaron and I arrived in as singles into our marriage, we've burned those. There is no returning. There is no going home. And so, therefore, we have to move forward and face our issues and deal with the problems, because there's nowhere else to go but forward together.
Well, this whole Cortez thing sounds totally made up, because I've never heard of that.
It sounds really cool, though.
It sounds totally cool.
is true. Look it up.
Okay, all right.
Burn the ships. Right. Google it.
All right. So let's say there's a person driving home right now. Let's call him a guy, and he's maybe had this kind of conversation with his wife about divorce, and now he's feeling a little convicted, like, ooh, maybe I said some damaging things, and I don't want her to think that. I don't want to give the enemy a foothold. What would he do when he got home tonight?
Yeah, I love the first thing is that it convicts us, and that's the Holy Spirit. Because doing this, we're sowing seeds of doubt, and we're creating an environment at some level that feels completely unsafe for both people. And so you're now hacking away at the foundation. So what may have felt like, man, we've been on thin ice, I mean, you're whacking away at that ice with a big old hammer, a big old axe. And so I would encourage, do what I did. I literally walked my wife to the couch, sat her down, and I said, you know what? I know that we have problems, and I'm certainly imagining that I've got some issues that I need to face. But Aaron, let me tell you this. that divorce is not an option. And I ask you to join with me. Let's take that word out of our vocabulary. Obviously, we need some help. So would you be willing? Can we find a counselor? Can we find a mentor? Can we find a pastor? Can we find someone? You know, can we find a small group and who can begin to help us really figure this out? But I want, you know, and you can't make your spouse agree to this, but you can ask. But you can certainly say, I want you to know that from this day forward, that word will never be uttered from my lips ever again.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's great. I think it can begin to lay a strength in the foundation.
Mm-hmm.
Slowly but surely, but it's an important, I think, first step.
Yeah. So I know we need to understand God's purpose for marriage, and you've mentioned that it's not about happiness. God uses marriage to help us become more like Christ. But if you're going to be Dr. Salesperson here, you're going to need to talk about marriage being a little bit happy, right?
Man, I love my marriage. It's a blast,
mm-hmm.
you know. And I have a great time, and there are many, 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 countless thousands of moments that, man, Aaron and I were grooving, and I feel completely happy. But that's never the goal. And I love, you know, Gary Thomas is really the one that coined that idea, and I loved it. I mean, as I began to understand that's so true, is that God is going to use my marriage to help me become more like him. And so my goal is not happiness, because the problem is, what do you do when you're not feeling happy? Then all of a sudden you start to go, well, maybe this wasn't right. Maybe
mm-hmm.
I wasn't in God's will when I made this decision. I mean, none of that. I always tell people, you know what? God gave you freedom. He gave you choice. God is not a matchmaker.
Mm-hmm.
God is not eHarmony. And he gave you clear choice in who you were going to marry. And I understand that when you made a choice, you made the choice. And he expects us to honor that. And he's going to use that relationship to help us become more like his son. And that gives me, one, an eternal perspective.
Mm-hmm.
That my marriage is a bigger, better than just happiness.
Mm-hmm.
It's actually helping me become more like him. And so thus that's the right expectation. And I made a choice, and I'm going to honor that commitment, you know, burn the ships. And then I expect that God's going to really continue to work on me as an individual. And he's going to use my wife
mm-hmm.
in amazing ways, painful ways, ways that I don't understand,
yeah.
agree with at times. And yet that's what's cool.
Yeah.
Is that, you know, Romans 8:29, where he is helping us to become more like his son.
Yeah. I imagine marriage is the greatest crucible out there for human growth. And there's a lot of people today that are preparing for that big day, and they're getting ready for their first year of life together. Greg, I wonder if you'd pray for those folks today.
God, thank you for creating marriage, and I've been so blessed. There's been hard seasons, and I thank you for those. Thank you for the Ebenezer moments of recognizing your help. As Aaron and I have had hard seasons, Lord, thank you for giving me an amazing spouse, amazing wife, and how she's helped me become more like you. So God, just help us to keep our marriages strong. Help us to be able to adjust at those when we walk into a marriage. And again, we ultimately want to glorify you. So God, we just trust you. You're in our corner. You're fighting for our marriage. Thank you for that.
Yeah.
It's in your precious name I pray. Amen.
Amen. Greg, thanks so much for spending time with us today. We sure appreciate it.
Oh, thanks for having me. Love it.
Yeah. You've been listening to Live the Promise. I'm Bill Arnold in for Susie Larson. You can find a podcast of this interview up on our mobile-friendly website at myfaithradio.com. So glad you tuned in today. As Susie says, the Lord wants you to last long and finish strong, and he is the one who will keep you strong to the end. Have a blessed day, everybody.